My name is Aubrey Goodman, and this is Distilled. Welcome to the show. You can find us on the web at distilledradio.com, also on Twitter at distilledradio. We tried to do at Distilled Podcast, but sadly it's one too many characters for a Twitter handle. So sad. Today, I am very pleased to be joined with my friend Chris Ross. Chris Ross is an exercise physiology director at Motive, the exercise physiology director.
The only one.
There's not really more than one. I guess you can introduce yourself.
Yeah. So you got that part right. Exercise physiology director at Motive. I'm on the data science team, but I feel like I'm on a team of my own sometimes. But I think that's most people there. You know, it's a small company.
Absolutely.
My background is in kinesiology. I got my bachelor's and master's in it at SF State, focusing on, you know, exercise physiology, biomechanics, and in general, just studying the human body and how it responds to exercise. You know, it's been a passion of mine since I can remember, and I feel very lucky to have studied it and brought it into my professional realm.
Excellent. We feel lucky to have you in the studio here.
Thanks.
To talk shop. You may be wondering how this fits in with a technology and design podcast. So we'll fill that in right now. So one of the things that is coming into the forefront more recently is this old concept. It's been around for ages, since like the 1980s, virtual reality in computing. And we're starting to see just hinting at a burgeoning industry, a whole new area of gaming, of computing, of interacting with the digital product and even with other people.
Yeah.
And there's this really fascinating intersection there with exercise and exercise-focused experiences. I don't even want to call them games necessarily, because I don't want to pigeonhole anything into like a narrow focus of conversation. But generally, you know, we're here to talk about that intersection, how exercise fits into product development, and specifically, in this case, the virtual reality of the world.
Yeah.
So Chris was kind enough to bring in his Oculus Rift for one of our company happy hours, like maybe a month or 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And happened to be right around at the same time that this very new game, Beat Saber, is just like sweeping the community, taking the whole community by storm. And he happened to have gotten it. It was just 2 days out, because it was on May 4th.
I believe, yeah, and I downloaded it at work.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's out. Let's try this thing out.
Yeah. It was great. And it's like, we're all sitting around just like experiencing this thing for the first time. And I had played with an Oculus Rift like years before that, but they didn't have the touch controllers yet.
Yeah.
They didn't have, I mean, it was a very different experience. I think the sensors were even just kind of not quite what they are today.
Yeah.
But you know, we play this game and it's like getting really into it. It was like really, really easily. It's like this amazing experience. Can you explain like your first take on it? Like what it was like for you?
You know, I had an idea of what it was going to be when I first got into it. I've played rhythm-based games. You know, I've been a gamer since I was a kid, playing the Atari, the one with the wood grain on it. I don't know which one that was. Back when all electronics were made to look like they were made of wood.
That's old school.
Yeah. No.
Skeuomorphism.
Right?
And play again.
And, you know, going into it, I was like, okay, this could be enjoyable. But it blew me away. You know, I've known, having the Oculus, that it could be immersive depending on the quality of the game and how they set things up. Jumping into Beat Saber, I was really blown away. I thought that it was not only engaging, the soundtrack was surprisingly good for something that had made for it music. You know, it wasn't pulling tracks off the radio.
Right.
But just the amount of work it takes to play the game and how satisfying it is to play it. That's so rewarding and so motivating. And you know, I've been a musician for a while too, and I love that aspect of it as well. Like, it was really well done, you know, and
it just really was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for the uninitiated masses,
Beat
Saber is a little bit like Dance Dance Revolution. Mm-hmm. It's like a traditional 3D blocks flying at your face, and you have some timing and some rhythm and some action you have to take, you know, in concert with that. In this case, it's you have a lightsaber in each hand and you're like slashing these blocks in half, and it's in tune with the rhythm of the music, and the music is like pretty intense, pretty powerful. It's like
good
workout kind of, you know, thumping bass music.
It's like a lot of house, dubstep, drum and bass, syncopated stuff.
Yeah, and like the first few tracks that they have now, I think there's like seven or eight tracks, and they're overwhelmed already. Like they're talking on Twitter saying, hey, can you guys, any composers interested in working with us? So, you know, we're just scratching the surface, like I was saying, about what that is going to evolve into.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about just like a lot of areas of it. But one thing that I really, really want to focus on here is the physiological things we can prove, things we can measure, things we can demonstrate. Because, I mean, I think anybody who's ever played a first-person shooter and had like bullets whizzing past your face, you know, you feel like there's this cortisol response, and mm-hmm. it's very clearly, you know, your heart rate can go up when you're playing video games. But the question really is like, how beneficial is that to you? Like your heart rate goes up when you're stressed, like you're worried about an exam in college, your heart rate goes up. Nervous about this, you know, dating some new person, mm-hmm. you know, your heart rate's like affected by that. But it being able to associate some medical value with that is especially intriguing.
Yeah, you know, some of my former professors at SF State have recently looked into VR, bringing it into the kinesiology laboratory and doing some experiments on it. And what they're looking at is just the efficacy. Is this a vehicle for exercise, mm-hmm. for gaining fitness, for weight loss, all the health benefits that we typically find when we're going out for a run, when we're joining a gym? Can we put on a VR headset, and can we gain some health benefits from that? And just from the preliminary study that they did, they found out, yes, you know, we tend to measure exercise by metabolic equivalence, or what are called METs or METs. And they found that it could range from the equivalent of walking casually to, you know, very high intensity swimming. You know, you can get your heart rate up during this. It is something that is real to you because it is immersive, and you're burning a fair amount of calories. I said, how many calories are you burning? You do this every morning almost, right?
Yeah. So I've been starting to, on the mornings when it's convenient for me, into my lifestyle schedule, which is complicated when you live with someone else. It's always, an interesting experience every day. I have recently, and I want to dig into some more of that. So of course, like, I was very excited getting this Oculus after you got it, after you showed it off at the office. I was like, man, this is really compelling. And I think I want to take a short sidebar on this, because one of the things you and I have been chatting about in just various moments throughout the day is like the compelling nature of that experience specifically, Beat Saber specifically, as a first experience or intro experience into the Oculus Rift product space at large.
Yeah.
And how captivating that can be as like a hook. Cause like up to that point, VR is interesting. There's a lot of primarily games, and primarily shoot 'em up games out there. So there's, you know, for the Counter-Strikers, there's plenty of interesting stuff that you can play with, but that's a narrow area of focus. And I'm just curious, like, in your experience, how would you characterize like you're observing people coming into this new experience and like sharing this with other people, and like what's been your reaction to their reactions? Like, how do you see that happening?
Oh, I think people are just excited. In general, like, you know, it's very approachable, you know, it has music, it kind of caters towards just that dance response people typically have. And the visuals are very simple, even though they look amazing. The direction is very easy to understand. You know, you have a for lack of a better term, a lightsaber in each hand. And when people have the cues of what to hit, they feel the beat. These aren't complicated rhythms, but they're very, well, you know, well, I mean, they can be.
They can be.
And that's a good thing because it starts you off with a template that's a song with a difficulty level that's appropriate to. You know, you have a song that you can, with the cues you have to hit, the obstacles you have to avoid, it could be something that's very easy or something that's very complicated, but it's still the same song. And I think people overall have been really positive in their reaction to us. I think they come away sweating and they don't even realize that they are until they take the headset off.
Absolutely. That's been my experience. That segues nicely back to the original question, which, like, how many calories am I burning when I'm doing this thing? And it's like, I get up in the morning, usually like from 7 to 8 or like 7:30, 8:30. I'm trying to play whenever it fits into my schedule. And I was so overwhelmed by the experience the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I decided, like, all right, I'm going to go home. Like, next time I pull this thing out, I'm going to measure how much my heart rate went up. Like, what's that look like in a quantifiable sense? And of course, then, perfect fitting thing with data science. I'm like, hey, here you go. Here's your data. I sent to Chris in the morning and I'm like, you've got to see this
because
this is way more sophisticated, like way more impactful than I thought it would be.
Absolutely.
My heart rate was in like the 130 range, 140 range for the vast majority of that. And again, I mean, I'm playing on like hard and expert mode. So you're really flailing your arms around viciously. But I think that's like also kind of part that ties into it, right? Mm-hmm. There's this approachability in terms of like I would love to quantify and say the easy level is always like your heart rate is going to be low end, you know, kind of map them to the sort of, I know Polar at least has sort of five range scale.
Yeah. The percentage that they use of it. Yeah.
And I think that's based on some science. It's not just something that Polar does.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't personally know. maybe do.
Yeah. If you take your maximum heart rate and you find the percentage of that maximum heart rate that you're reaching, you can definitely pull some physiological adaptations from that. You know, you can have lower ones that are more about just caloric burn and not really a fitness gain. But if you're reaching a high heart rate with this, with a video game, essentially, that's almost unheard of.
Well, that's what I want to get into, right? So like the difference between a high heart rate due to stress and like adrenaline, that part may not necessarily correlate to any meaningful health benefit. But in this case, we're talking about something that's active, repetitive motion, just like you're like on a jumping rope or, something like that on a speed bag. Or something like that, where your hands are moving really fast, but your body's not moving that much.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, there's a lot of correlation there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a fascinating area.
Yeah.
I'm really looking for. I'm glad we started doing that. And I think we should expand on it.
Absolutely. Because your heart rate can reach higher levels with a normal video game, but that heart rate is going up because it's anticipating. It's anxiety in a way. It's psychological stress. It's anticipating something that needs to be done. But with this one, it's a coupling of the both, and that's what exercise really is. You're demanding a lot from your body because there's a metabolic caloric deficit you're creating, or a metabolic deficit needs to be fulfilled. You know, you're stepping up to the plate in a game that requires you to squat. You know, to slash side to side, choreograph
avoid
movement.
The walls.
Yeah, take away the headset. Take away the controllers. And you have someone doing a dance.
Right.
And it's a really, really intense one sometimes, but they're dancing, you know? You know, it's something that I really feel as an exercise physiologist, you know, it's very exciting to see this. How big the gaming industry is in the world. And now you can bring in a fitness aspect to it.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I want to take it in another direction. If you, like, so... having purchased one yourself and I have also, they're not cheap.
No, they're not.
It's not something, I mean, we're talking about, it's more expensive than an Xbox.
Yeah.
And then you might have to buy an Xbox controller also for certain games and found that out the hard way. There's definitely, this is not financially obvious, easy win for most households.
Yeah.
You know, it costs on the order of, I think I paid the same amount for my TV, actually. And I just got this nice 4K TV.
That's nice. So, yeah, because the Oculus itself is about $400.
Yeah, that's what I paid.
But that's, you need the laptop.
Right, and that's the other part. Yeah. So I'm a Mac guy, and I was kind of a little annoyed when I found out that the Oculus wouldn't work on my Mac at all. Mm-hmm. They're just like across the board, Oculus does not support it. Mm. And I kind of think, part of me thinks that Apple's going to say, like, one up them and come back with just like an Apple specific thing that only works with Macs.
I bet you they are.
I don't know.
They're going to do that. Because do you think the move, this is like a little off topic, but do you think the move to get the Oculus only supported by like PCs was a deliberate thing?
I don't.
Okay.
It comes down to the hardware.
Okay.
The average PC has a better VGA, better graphics card than GPU. That's what I was looking for. Than Macs. Okay. I mean, Macs, frankly, have never been attractive to the game developer community because the game, basically, there's just not a lot of market there.
Yeah.
So if you don't have enough people buying games in that space, no one's going to develop them for that space. So Xbox is popular. It's easy. You can buy it at Walmart. So it's more approachable.
Yeah.
And even though the Xbox is similarly priced, you know, it's over $300 as far as I know.
Yeah.
I haven't actually bought an Xbox in a really long time or ever. I think the last gaming console I had was a PS2. 1999.
I have to admit, though, I have a PS4 right now, and the Oculus takes precedence over that.
Yeah,
I'd rather.
So
play,
okay. So that's the stickiness that I'm really excited about. So
I
posit that if you take away the physicality of the game, you take away all of the attractive stickiness, all of the things that get you in the first place. At least the long term value. Of course, there's going to be some short term gain
from
the daily achievements and whatever you can get from your. Mm-hmm. From your mobile game, like I still play Clash Royale every day.
Okay,
I've probably played that for 1,000 hours now. No, probably not, but a lot.
Yeah.
Every morning for like very, very, very many days.
Yeah,
a couple games, you know. So
yeah.
To me, like, there's the stickiness there is that the game is compelling and it's really, really replayable.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of games that are not that replayable
on the Oculus
and
or just in VR,
I think. I mean, generally, given the number of titles there are out in the Oculus, I would feel like you probably buy games or buy new apps for the Oculus more frequently than for your laptop, for sure. But for your phone, I think maybe they're about on par. You might buy as many as you do in a mobile. But in a mobile, that's saying a lot, right?
Yeah.
How many apps do you have on your phone that are not provided by Apple or by Samsung?
I would say, I mean, there's a good amount of them. Most of them are free. You know, to spend money on an app is, do I really want to spend $2? Is
it? Right. Yeah. I had zero qualms whatsoever about spending $20 on Beat Saber. I would say they're giving money away at that price.
That's the thing. It's so cheap.
It's apparently, I think honestly, they've done very well to set that price because it's, we're talking about it. We're basically setting up a whole episode about this. So, I mean, that kind of plays into it, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I tend to think, the price factors in, the replayability factors in, the branding factors in, right? Remember, what day did they publish this? It was not the 4th, but it was the 1st. They published it on the 1st, like midweek, and then May the 4th was that, and they just did this brilliant subtle branding thing where they just happened to piggyback on May the 4th and like everybody talking about Star Wars, and of course what is there in a Star Wars photo? Fucking lightsabers.
That's so smart. I didn't know they did that.
It
didn't even cross my mind.
I don't know how much of that was smart and how much of it was luck.
Yeah.
I don't have relationships with those
guys.
Hey guys, if you're out there, we'd love to talk to you. But like, it's just genius, right? It's like it fits so perfectly, and still somehow not using a single Lucasfilm trademark.
Yeah. Yep.
Amazingly, they've dodged it so beautifully. It's
that great. And that's tricky. I can imagine with LucasArts. Lucasfilm.
Aggressive.
Hey, you throw on a May the 4th hashtag on a post with Beat Saber. That's promotion right there. You know, that gets it out there. You know, I think one of the biggest things about the game that I really enjoyed, and this goes for a very few amount of games in terms of like what VR offers, is that for a game to feel attractive and immersive, it has to not be a glorified tech demo.
Yeah.
You know, and Beat Saber does not have that at all. It feels it's own game, and it's complete.
It's complete. Yeah. That would definitely describe my first impression of it. Like, this does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And it's completely amazing. And so, of course, I went like playing a lot.
Yeah.
And not getting better scores. I'm like, why is my score not going up?
Yeah.
And so then at some point, I noticed that I went in and searched it on YouTube. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
You have to do like specific thing. Like the engineers apparently were getting a lot of questions saying like, hey, why can't I get a better score? And it had to do with like their specific gesture recognizer. I don't know. There's so many things to get into here. And from an engineering perspective, I could talk for half an hour just about gesture recognizing or gesture recognition and machine learning in the cloud and with, you know, kinematics involved. Like you have these natural hinges that prevent you from moving. Your elbows don't work. Mm-hmm. They don't bend backwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do, but it hurts
it would probably
badly.
Hurt. Yeah.
You probably stop playing the game at that point.
Yeah.
I hope. Yeah. But like tracking all of that mathematically, like there are so many ways you can twist your turn and move your wrists and arms and elbows and shoulders. And like if you're doing a weird movement with your hips, does that convey to your wrists? Probably. So
yeah. Do you feel it does? Do you feel it can recognize your body well enough, given that it's only looking at your arms and your head?
So this is again part of the brilliance of this game. Like they have perfectly exploited the touch controllers to the maximum effect by making a sword that has inherently zero mass because it's a lightsaber.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right? Like you don't, your brain will naturally believe it because A, it's never held a real lightsaber, and B, it kind of feels like it would if you did.
Yeah. If it was a huge, like, broadsword.
No, it'd be super heavy. You'd hit, like, you'd be knocking over the furniture. It'd be terrible.
And you'd be swinging around this thing like it's nothing.
And you'd cut your cables.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. We have to wait for the wireless headset to come out because that wire does get in the way.
So, I want to get into that. So we have, like, I don't know, 5 or so more minutes.
Sure.
That is one of the things about VR to me that right now really is the only significant barrier to just total widespread adoption of these kinds of things. Yeah. Like stepping outside of Beat Saber, there's already a bunch of other apps out there. There's Box VR you've talked up a lot. Like, can you speak to that for a bit?
Yeah. Box VR is, you know, if Beat Saber gets you active because your motivation is to complete a level, to complete the song, to be engaged. Box VR is the same kind of motions. I mean, you're boxing essentially, but the motivation is more fitness based. Mm-hmm. It's with that in mind. They both can do the same thing, but Box VR is more about, we're setting up boxing combos. You do have to squat just like in Beat Saber. You do have to kind of dodge things.
Mm-hmm. Like Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But instead of a button, like dodge right, dodge left, you're literally physically moving your body.
You have to engage your entire body. And I enjoy it, but it's more of like a fitness mindset on that one. You know, out of pure enjoyment, Beat Saber's a little better.
Yeah.
Box VR, it's fun. You have these balls flying towards you, and this is a jab when it's yellow. This is a hook when it's green. But
then you have to make that physical movement.
You have to make that movement. But there's one thing that I saw showing people these two games. One is that Box VR, you can cheat.
Oh.
You can do what people used to do on the Wii, which is a small
movement.
Yeah, and it will recognize that, like you threw the hardest punch ever. So you don't feel like you have to do the motion, With Beat Saber, you got to swing because that thing is out there on the side. It's further away.
Well, I think so. It's both, right? It's that the block that they're sending at you that you have to chop in half is further away from the center, but also that the Beat Saber engineers have developed a gesture recognizer that's like more strict.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe it is that I'm sure as an engineer on a interactive game, in past professional experiences, there's definitely a conversation that's happening that says like, is this like, are players able to succeed in these tasks? And there's always a balance between how much is too much and how much is not enough, you know? Generally speaking, they have to make the game so easy anyone can win, and then just make a extreme or brutal level that's like actually almost beatable
if you're like you,
right?
Well, and you dare to go there.
Getting back to Beat Saber for a second, I was very, very excited about they have a single saber mode just for in case you're not satisfied with flailing one arm around at twice the speed.
Yeah.
is quite compelling. And in that case, like I can legitimately feel like a lot of soreness and like,
oh yeah,
I definitely feel the effect, the physical effects of swinging a very lightweight object around. So it's sort of like fencing in a lot of ways.
Let me ask you a question about this game. Cause when I think about this, I think about on the physiological side, but I think about this game on like a sports psychology side.
Okay.
So let me ask you, what is motivating about this particular game for you?
For me? Yeah. Oh man. So I personally have always wanted to try hacking and slashing things with a lightsaber. Yeah. Just personally.
Fair enough. That's all you have to say.
But that's not the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like part of, you know, I'm like a person who is excited by, things like Game of Thrones and you know, these kind of old school, like medieval kind of things. Mm-hmm. And swordplay isn't exactly, you know, on the top 10 of 21st century activities. So to me, the idea of like kind of learning this old skill, and I saw, one of, I don't know if Oculus explicitly has it, but, one of the VR products has a product that allows you to do like the Katniss Everdeen thing where you're like in a virtual environment shooting virtual arrows at things, and you're using these touch controllers. I'm waving my arms around like an idiot, assuming anybody out there in Radio Land can see them. Sorry, folks.
It's very convincing in person.
Yeah. But the idea is, you know, like being able to do 3D archery and having like virtual targets that can float around, and if you physically move your hips relative to them, they subtly move in the way they would actually move in real life.
Yeah.
There's that too. So, I mean, there's so many opportunities, like, for me as the kid in Boy Scouts who got the canoeing merit badge instead of the archery merit badge, I'm really missing out on that merit badge. I want to do that archery shit. And in VR, like, I don't want to go find a damn archery range in California and figure that out. No, but I will absolutely spend almost that much energy trying to find one in virtual space.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it satisfies that need.
Yeah.
As an aside, one of the apps of games that comes with the Oculus Touch bundle is Robo Recall, which will definitely challenge your targeting skills. Yeah. If you want a shoot 'em up game that isn't so much about headshots and, you know, spawn camping.
I mean, you can see how more challenging it is to aim in that virtual world as opposed to like playing video game with a controller.
Totally. I mean, the very first thing I noticed with the Robo Recall was when you hold, you start with pistols, regular, you know, like 9mm, and they in the 3D world, the virtual world, they have the stock and barrel sight markers. Mm-hmm. And if you're really paying attention and you line them up, you will hit your target.
Yeah.
And it's actually awesome. I found that incredibly incredibly compelling. As someone who really loves marksmanship, and I'm a very pacifist guy, but when it comes to like my favorite things about Boy Scouts, were always like, you know, the riflery. I don't know. Marksmanship in general.
Yeah.
Arrows, hatchets.
Yeah.
Like I top shot. Have you ever heard of that?
Top Shot.
It's a History Channel show. No. It's basically gun porn. High speed photography, like marksmen hitting their targets. They had one that was, we were getting off target, but it's fine.
Yeah.
They had one that was shoot a bullet with a handgun, like from a handgun at a axe. At 20 feet, and there's a balloon on either side of the axe, and you're supposed to pop both balloons with one shot. That's the kind of stuff that
gets you split
the bullet in half. It's the only way to do it.
People could do that,
and they could do it. Yeah, they had like 3 out of 5 could do it. It was amazing. So that's the kind of stuff
that goes to show you all the old movies where they block bullets with swords and axes. You just end up being shot twice.
It's possible, but you die twice. Yeah. Yes, it gets both shoulders instead of one.
Yeah,
you could have just dodged it.
You just move out of the way. Well, back to the Beat Saber thing. I was thinking about this earlier regarding like the whole motivation aspect. That's why I asked you that. You know, there's no like lack of gyms in the U.S.
No, you exactly. Know, I walk past like 5 of them to get to the office, and I work at a fitness company.
Yeah, exactly.
We exercise every week.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have our office workouts, and we have everything. Which, you know,
I seem to, from a calendar perspective, always seem to have conflicts.
Hey, well, we're moving them to an earlier time, so maybe better, actually, you know, our downstairs neighbors, if they're listening to this, we're sorry.
But even still, we have so many opportunities.
Yeah, we have.
But why did I choose to spend my money on an Oculus instead of a gym membership?
That's a really good question. You know, there's a prevalent theory called self-determination theory in sports psychology. And just to simplify it, it's all about what motivates you and how that motivation really attracts you to certain things. Mm-hmm. There's different components to it, but to be what you essentially want to be in exercise, and a lot of things too, is you want to be intrinsically motivated. And being intrinsically motivated means you enjoy the activity. Even with all the health benefits you can get from playing Beat Saber, you know, better cardiac output, you can lose some body fat, you can gain coordination. Those things are almost secondary to what you get from just the activity itself. And in this theory, and this is something interesting, because video games have offered the components that create this intrinsic motivation, but they never could do it before with fitness. Maybe, you know, DDR before Dance Revolution.
Yeah, but in that case, that one's rare, because there were actual hardware manufacturers that answered the call and built platforms that had pads that supported the specific gameplay of that one specific game.
Yeah, it could be translated to something else, maybe.
In that case, it's a microcosm, but I think that is the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
Right? The rest of it is following. We're saying, hey, they're onto something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the case of VR, and especially with like the touch controllers, the controllers and the interface, the way you interact is the thing that becomes that hook.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have something that people just are so, I mean, video games are so popular in the US.
Are they really?
I think they're, maybe. So I think they are. It's a bit, I'm like, I can't, it's easy.
It's like a $10 billion industry.
I know, it's so big.
I'm making that up.
Okay. But it probably huge. Is not far
I think it's
from
actually
that.
Probably more than that.
You know, you huge. Have like video games, and they can never really be, unless it's like you said, like with DDR being a, kind of like a microcosm. You have something now that the entire form of playing it means you have to move your body, whether or not it's for a fitness game or whatever. But it lends to that intrinsic motivation. I think it's really going to get people to play a lot more, because as it gives you the three components of intrinsic motivation, and not to get too much into it, but really what they are autonomy. You know, you have to feel autonomous in your actions. And you can see that by the popularity of video games, people choose to spend time playing video games a good portion of their free time, you know?
Oh yeah.
The other part is competency. You have to feel competent in what you're doing. And the interesting thing about video games is that it's like Beat Saber, is that you can decide what difficulty level you start with.
Yeah.
You know, you can decide where you start, and usually the earlier levels are the easier ones, and it teaches you in a way. So it kind of fosters that. And the other one is that you feel relatedness. Like, you feel there's a social support system with this. And we have multiplayer games online. We have all these things that you can play with people around the world. So it has the makings to really push you or give someone an intrinsic motivation. And now, since we're seeing these video games like Beat Saber come out, you know, I'm excited as an exercise physiologist to see how this fosters a lot of people's motivations to play and get active. You know, Beat Saber is I think hopefully the beginning of a huge wave of stuff that will really get people immersed into playing.
I mean, we already see it.
Yeah.
There are already people making mods for it, making new crazy insane things, and I mean I've seen a huge spike in I was gonna say I've seen a huge spike in tweets, but then it's like, wait, that's just because I followed the Beat Saber account.
That's your self-confirming bias right there. Like,
confirmation bias.
Yeah, yeah. Play, oh, confirmation bias. Yeah.
No, but it's yeah. I've seen not just Twitter, but just in person, seeing people's direct response to it has been nothing short of spectacular.
We had one guy playing yesterday, one of our coworkers, and when he was playing, he was like doing a full dance.
Oh,
like he had like rhythm, and I was like,
good rhythm.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't just like, he's waiting for it. He was like dancing,
going between the beats. Immediately, like, it felt that natural groove, which, by the way, gets you a terrible score, but it feels good.
That's true. Well, I mean, do you think that
it takes all kinds?
Yeah. I mean, where do you think it could go next? Like a Beat Saber, you know?
We have no time for that.
Okay, yeah, that's a whole nother thing.
I don't know, but everywhere it goes is going to be good.
Yeah,
from where we are.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's an exciting time. And, you know, maybe there are some software integration opportunities and we can have some influence on that needle.
I hope so, personally and professionally. I think that would be a really good idea, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us, folks. This has been, I am very, very excited about this. And
me too.
The topic is exciting. The space is exciting. The players are exciting. Everything is exciting. So thank you for listening. This has been Distilled.